I don't know how long they've been in Newtown. I never point that out. I didn't put asking. She, I don't think it kept a record like what we did. See, my grandmother kept a diary, which was left to me. And these pictures were left as well. I used to go up as a small boy and I was terribly interested in the past. And used to listen to learn here about this. Now, the Davidsons, Ishu and Arthur's father, you know how he was killed, didn't you? Didn't you know that? Oh, a horse broke loose, broke away and was up in a stack of hay, eating it. And he went up to catch it, and it turned around and kicked him, and he died just a day or two after. That's what happened to her. So that he must have died a young man. I tell you what, there were a lot of splendid books. They must have been very well-read people, because they had a fine collection of books of our sort. And we had them all, we took them all down to Derridea. And we were all in a special place. But when I come on here, I don't know what to do with all this stuff. Then I think he must have left a lot of stuff behind. You see, if you've got all that stuff, anything to left behind, I suppose, oh no, but the place was let to be other people by that time. I can't remember, but there's a lot of... I just have no idea. I don't know how long they were there. I couldn't tell you. I know that one of them was married to the... One of the ladies was married to the Hugh Arthur's father's sister. Sisters. One was married to Maitland of Haggerty. Well, they've been down here since 1413, Battle of Harlaw, that occupied that land where the battle was fought. I know that much. And there was a Davidson provost of Aberdeen at that time. And old Patty Cooper said he was the same Davidson. He told me that. The same Davidson as the Newtown Davidson. He was the provost of Aberdeen during the Battle of Halla and led the Aberdeen army, which defeated the Lord of the Isle. But he was killed. His arm and nothing was up in the town hall of Aberdeen there. Yeah. It was old Patty shooting the whole thing after, just as you were at the door on the right hand side. And then there's still Davidson's at Inchmarlow, the same lot of those. Up the east side, they would have stayed there. But I never really heard anything about just the things I got that I picked up. How long were you down? I have no idea. Don't know what that would be to, if one could get to the factor. The marriage was the factor for one house, the solicitor who would be the factor. I look back at the records and they had them still. You'd be able to find out that out. I've got an old book up in the loft here. Given the names of the estates round about and the folks who'd have read them and so on, but I don't think it would probably go so far back as that. I couldn't say, I can't remember. It's up in the loft and rents and all that sort of stuff. I mean, there are workplaces in it. He said, but I never heard it. Oh, see, the Coopers were raised from 1721, and then they were on the Clat. There were two farms in Clat. That one opposite the distillery. I forgot what's the name of it again. Elfield. That's where our folks, our direct ancestors, came from that in 1721. An old boy came from there. There are buried in Clat churchyard there from that date back. They are the people that fought at the Battle of Arpa, 1645. Well, they come from south of Aberdeen. They come up from there about. The old boy here, his father, owned the estate of Alan Vale, but he was married twice, and he left all the estate to his second family. And my grandfather only was given a farm for himself. There was the other farm. And there was a captain, somebody I get for his name, used to go and come and visit us. He was a great friend of the old man's. And I think he was a relation. He came up from Stonehaven. He lived here. But the Alan Vale estate, there's a cemetery in Aberdeen called after it, Alan Vale. And the Aberdeen Cooper had been buried in it. An old boy, as he's called, Paddy Cooper, has his coat of arms and all that on there. And he always had that on the tombstone. And in all his letters to my father, he always had a crest on the outside, his crest. And I remember my father giving a great friend of Chrissy's, you know. She went to Eastbourne for school. And brought up a friend of hers once, and she was a collector of crests. I could remember seeing my father giving her an envelope with a crest on it. My dad is there's the Rogers. They came from Ireland in 1590 something, and settled in Inchin. The two oldest boys, the first ones that came over, at Bridget Bremner, at churchyard, and I've got the whole of their history there at my finger. If you want to tell them about that, I'll take it up to you already. I've showed you some of these things, haven't I?
Yes.
With a book of red book from 1721 on, so. There's a tombstone still there, the old age churchyard where I put the Davidsons. You've seen it, haven't you? I don't know how far back it goes, I couldn't tell you. But I went down with somebody there, and they brought down the whole thing. Oh, just maybe David's mother and David, I think, would it have been. Wouldn't you? Would you? What must have been David, his mother? They wanted to know about that. And that's an old churchyard, but I don't know why these stones are there. It used to be a special arch shut in the thing around it. A special graveyard there, had to add to themselves. But it's all altered. You see, they've altered all of that. They did the same with the inn up in Clatt. They took down all the, we had a stone on pedestals, you know. They took them all down, put them flat, so that they could run more over the whole of the place and not upset them. Either I or altered. And the folks are not quite back there, all buried there at Clatt. The old last one died, they had to put a new tombstone and bury him outside, not bury it, you go in as you go in at the gate. His tombstone's there, away from all the rest. There was no room to put him out. Well, I remember going to my grandmother's funeral, and they dug up a huge box and took a straw, skeletons put into that and then put back in. Devilish for a young man. I was only 9 years old at the time. And speaking about that, that was in the harvest time, at that funeral. And the roads had hardly been cut through snow drifts up as flat for that funeral. And I remember as we went up the back of the hill, there's a chap with a white brow amongst his sheep, the stooks were all standing, and he's picking them up and beating them off, the snow off them, with the thing he sharpened a scythe sharpener. Well, how long ago would that be? I was 9 years old. Well, 9 for 93 for 30. That gives you how many years ago? that happened. I can't remember the date.
Mm.
I don't know the date, but that's what happened. People were taking in their stuff and dug on the snow of the sheaves. It was a nice, dark day. It was one of the folks that went with us. I went in a closed garage, but they went in an open break. One of them got pneumonia and died. My man had lived today in shops, it's where the old lady lived. I'm a grandmother. He says, that's what it had. Have you got, did you ever get in a, did you ever make out a sort of table and put all the folks that passed to the Davidsons? Well, some world it must be, you should speak to David about that last game, you couldn't. Because I had him here and we searched everything that we could. It's a long time ago, I got it all. It must be years ago. His mother, I was here today. Mm. True, she was. He's the only one in the family that took an interest in my family. Nobody else had the slightest interest. That always attracted me. And that's why I kept all the records.
Mm.
And all the cutting out of papers and things like that. I went all back with the papers and that saved.
What can you remember about my grandmother when she was young?
She been Chrissy?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, everything. I remember when she went to Eastbourne. She always went before she was taken down to the plane and put on. She hated going away down there. She said she happened to go all the way to South England in those days. Oh, she was tremendous. And she was awful good to us kids of us. She would have been about 10 years older than me. Magnificent cook, of course she was. Great heart to run the house and all. Everybody then, they all had specialty. My mother could cook, make fish soup better than anybody else at the whole place, you see. That was her masterpiece. And the other was making stuffing for a fowl or that oatmeal stuffing. Nobody could equal her stuffing. That was two things she always did herself. And then because I did all the fancy stuff, all the fancy cook, and then for they did half a parties, no old days you could imagine. But, not in my time so much as but in the Uncle Hugh and Arthur and Chrissy. They were all pretty much older than us. And they always dined with my father and mother up the stairs, you see, in the dining room, and the rest of us dined in the nursery. With the two beds, the old housekeeper, she had her gravity down in the kitchen with all the beds that came in. There was about always 4 or 5 beds during the day. Plus another half dozen in the harvest. They came to feed all that folks every day. Extraordinary. Yes. They must have been, they'd married with their folks, the Davidsons, round about surely. What I like to be angry. My memory got so bad in recent times, I remember about the past, but there's auntie me. Oh, no, that's a cooper from. I think of the old aunt that we used to go and see. There's one of them, a cooper, one was a Davidson, Auntie Maitland, and Auntie Anne, she's a cooper. There's some, I found the date or some other, but that's. I can't remember. That we used to see. They all lived in their own houses and in Peruvia. The chap, the Metland chap, he'd been on that period and he kept all their records. And he appeared on television and everything to tell them about their family. And he's investigated everything he can about it, tried to get all who worked out as far as he could remember. Because that's, as I say, they were all there in 13 and 14, 13. And they're still, the family's still here. There's two houses, two farms adjacent. And I was at school, one of those boys in my class. And I always came up the old Dunedin and all that, all those were dead. What was the time? Oh, it was popping, wasn't it?
Yeah. How old was my grandmother when she went to Eastbourne?
Where to?
Eastbourne.
Well, she went to Huntley, and she went to Huntley, and remember she was very keen on painting. She painted an awful lot of pictures. I don't know why I kept it. So they maybe up in the loft there, some of them, I should say. Hugh painted too. We had some lovely painted by her. I don't know what it is. I've never looked up to see. Maybe they're up there yet.
What did she paint?
She's one beautiful, wonderful woman, a large, big one, just like that, about as big as that, and a picture as big as that. Beautiful picture. Something in that style, you see, with that sort of thing. But full size, you know. Sort of. And all pictures, all sorts of things. Oh, she'd some beautiful landscape pictures. And she was there. She was a good. She and Hugh used to play the piano together. Not I remember, but the old days. They were always, my mother's arms on them. Of course, my mother had the most magnificent voice. I've only had two women who could equal her, a mother in Melbourne. I forget the other one. Hardly ever get it. That's all the two people that I could say that equal her. Never heard such a magnificent voice in all of it, like the other people have ever heard. Drowned them all. I mean, if she was in church, she drowned everybody. She had above everybody. What a gorgeous, deep voice, you know. Marvellous. I mean, you're not of these people that had high-pitched voices. I'm always struggling with a stick. There's no nothing like that for her. Not the slightest. Oh, what a gorgeous voice. It's funny that I can say yeah, that's extraordinary. They wanted her to become a professional, but she wouldn't do it. I said, oh, yes, of course, goodness gracious. When we were small kids, Chrissy looked after us, helped look after us all, and helped to bring us all up. She was with the owner now, she said. And never went out about her, always at home, you see, the whole time until she married.
How did she meet my grandfather?
I said, oh, his school was going up there. But all they all went up to Huntley. She went to Huntley School there, but of course it was a ladies' school she went to. My father went to one of these schools when they live at the school, you know that. That was in Bath. A beautiful accent she had, beautiful voice, beautiful mother. But none of us could have it, not much. Yes. Why? Because she had special music lessons at Huntley, Hugh too, I can't remember where she learned that painting, well, it was there too, probably, I couldn't say. And then, you see, when her father died, he left money to have all one thing in his will, was that everything, one of his children must be well educated. So this good Arthur had to go there. My father said, I don't think either of them wanted to go to the university. But the old man insisted on it. He thought far more of them than he did us, you know. I did it, really. He's half a president, but I don't know about that. And very fond of him. He said to him that poor old Hugh, do you remember when he wanted to take his MA, and he went into that, and he fell foul of one of the professors, and this man wouldn't pass him. Stuck him every time, and he sent him up to one house to met a young tailor who was a teacher, but also he took him on at night and tried to get him through all the exams that this particular thing he stuck in. And then he went, and then he went in for into the medical school, and he got a first class certificate in 3. He was an extraordinarily clever man. He got a first class in every class except one. And again, he fell foul of the band that the professor only gave him a second class. But all the others. And I told you the story about him winning the medal for the physiology. Oh, didn't I tell you that? Oh, well, my brother Alan and I. And Hugh and Arthur, all the same digs. And their friends used to come in at night and they'd all grind away together and asking questions. You know, Arthur and Dawes and Simpson and Cregan and that other old friend. Well, Hugh never joined them. He sat playing patient or something in a corner by himself while they were all working like this. And when they started talking about a chap being an up by the medals, and I said, I wonder how somebody could beat that chap. Suddenly he stopped playing his cards. And he said, well, if you want to beat that, anyone you could beat him if you want to try. So they said, well, we'd like to see you beat him. He said, certainly I'll beat him. I'll take all my bet if you wish it. So I had bets that he wouldn't do it, and he did. And he got the medal. Oh, it's not good to do. If he'd wanted, he could have done it. Extraordinary man. So there you are. But in this time, he's the only man that I remember once, when I was walking up with him to Dunedin, but I'd come up to this for old farming here in the old days and that. And he was manager at the time. And we stopped in the field to discuss something. And I suppose I had a different idea. I'd never forget his eyes. He looked at me and by Jove, he fell up at me in my place. I'd never forget the look in his face. I would have got the doctor to put it away. Because he was an army, he just retired to the army, he's a colonel army. And an officer who, the adjutant, his adjutant, came here for a week. And after the war, and he had a chat with me, and he's telling me, he had no fear. He said, once we were coming down the road, the bullets were hitting the ground all around us. I leapt into a trench. And he said, come out of that. Walk along with me. And they went right down the whole way down. And in one time, he had a bit how he took all his men one night. When he got up at 1 a.m, he felt uncomfortable. He thought he'd seen a chap running down the down past. Somebody running away the wrong way, and he felt that there must be something wrong. The Germans had broken through, probably. So he got up at 1 a.m. and ordered the whole of his people to start and retreat at once, and. There was cavalry men up on a hill above them. He sent a man up to them, one of his officers, to ask them to come down and attach their horses to his wagons and that, to take them up the hill, get them over the top of that hill. And he got everything away, and right down went far back as he could. And the Germans captured both the things he was in charge of, the hospital things and everything. Well, he took all his people out, all his wounded and everything, and took them right back. Temporary hospital place and a whole outfit, I forget all what you called it. And there was three of them to each regiment, you see. And the others on the other side of him, each side of them, were all captured. And one of his own, carry the wounded dead. A wagon that he carried the wounded dead.
Ambulance.
One of his ambulances was captured 10 miles behind the scene that he'd sent away earlier, before he was spotted dead. This chap was captured 10 miles behind his life. And he got the whole lot of his men cleaned down and out and saved. And then he was promoted. He was promoted to in charge of his three, of his own regiments that they had to look after. Right? And then he was promoted to the head one of the whole particular lot of, I think there was three different regiments, probably, I think it was. He was made a head man for all that, to look after all the wounded, that sort of thing. And he got the DSO, two bars, and Croix de Guerre from the French. And he did a lot of mentions. And I know it's one extraordinary place. But he was the only officer left alive in this particular part where we were fighting. And a whole wagon load of troops came up to support. And a whole lot of troops came up. And he told them not to go forward, to go right back, and told them where to go, but they took no notice of him. And they were all killed, blood and bad. I guess Chuck told me all about it. He was his adjutant, went right through the wall with him. And of course he did. He represented the army in sport, great sport. Everything he did, water polo, golf, rugby, represented all the university, did all those things. And then hardly the same. He was captain while he was stationed in Ireland for 3 years. He was captain of the golf team of three men, of something on the tour. I'd beat all the other regiments still there. For the whole 3 years, they were the best team. Nobody could touch him. Well, I was a neat handicapper, but never could beat him. Beat him every time. And then he rode the hounds. He represented the RMC for pulling the hounds, the Kildare hounds, the Kildare hunt. He went out with them, and he used to say, well, I used to feel ashamed when I'd be riding away to join them. The old colonel was coming down to do my work while I was away. Yeah. Oh, he had a tremendous good bread, I know, dead out of my dad. And great hand at sport. And then he hunted with the hounds in Peshawar in India. They hunted the jackal, you see, with a pack of hounds. Yes, he was twice in it. He had to come home, and he got to Derek, I got to go. But I forget now. But he was spent 5 years practically. And was away up over the Del outbreak of cholera. They had one of these wars up with Afghanistan, some of these, Pakistan or something like that. And he had to. They sent. He was medical officer health the whole of the one division, the biggest division of India. Yes, he took his DPH, you see, in Aberdeen now, that diploma in public health. And he was asked to go up to join the army to see what he would. And the first lot that he got up with, they were all camped around a well, and you know. 28 of them were dead in the morning from this terrible disease. All from one regiment. And then he had to go on to a fort. And nobody with him, just by himself. And he stopped to ask the waiter about him. And this gentleman, this man asked him to show him his revolver. So he hit it out down in a bag or somewhere, and anyone could just his luggage. So he dug this out and showed him. So the chap he produced, he was an Indian and that went to the hell, produced the most beautiful weapon. He said, I was ashamed of my money. Well, they went on and he got to the fort. And the first night he was there, some chap stupidly went out in the night, for a little stroll around the fort. The sentry shot him dead. So it was probably some of these chaps coming down. And he had nobody with him. He just went up all that country alone himself. Found his way. And he went to a bit of climbing up in the Himalayas and all that. At two. And his time when he was up there. He did a special holiday way up there. And one of the men was there. Then of course he was stationed in Singapore. Remember we were looking at a thing about the chairman starting that war. Do you remember the fight out in the River Plate? Well, the night before war was declared, they had a German cruiser stationed at Singapore, and they were entertained the war to a dinner. In the morning it disappeared, and that ship, I can't remember the name of it, but that ship, did the awfulest lot of damage, sank, goodness knows, went before the family coroner and sank it, because he was sent straight home from Singapore to France. We called him right back. He was in black and muddy island, not in the Singapore, but on an island attached in a fort there. That was his dish, of course. He played a lot of goals there too. Whatever he went, he played goal. And of course, he was in West Africa, stationed there for 15 months, here on your own. After he was in the South African area, that port was his headquarters, in the colony on the left of Cape Town, belonging to the Germans, remember. His headquarters was we owned this particular port, Britain did at that time, for the Navy. And then he was, of course, we had to work back and forth between India and that. And then he was twice in the China Seas. And he was all through the Gallipoli campaign. And he was in charge of all the doctors of the ships and supported chased the Turks out of Israel and all that, and back to their own country. But I can't remember if they were general, just my lips there, a day or two ago, I remember well. They were very successful. They chased them right out, swept the Germans, the Turks, all that, and beat out of the country. And they got the down out to the coast and helped out the coast. Oh, and of course, Arthur was through the South African War as well, whatever. What did it say? Was it 10 exactly? That thing. Well. My mother's youngest sister, Auntie Nellie, she was married to Lord Padre Robertson, famous war parson. He was all through the war in Egypt and then South Africa. So on. Boer said he's the bravest man in the British Army. I read that in the paper. I'd sent home from Suzanne. He was at right along while at the door. I forgot the name of the battle. In the dark, they were attacking the Boers. They were taken by surprise. Stayed there, nothing happened. They fell into the damage. 14, I think, all the officers, I think, were shot down. His horse was shot from under him, but he wasn't that himself. Then whenever it got sort of daylight, he took a white flag and went up to the, right across to the Boers and asked permission to collect his dead. While he was there, one of our batteries started firing at him, told him, all right, don't bother, I'll go over and stop him. Galloped back, stopped the chaps firing, then went back and completed his job. He was mentioned for the VC three times in the Egyptian campaign. And again, he got the DA's order, the South African War.